Welcome to the Trade Securely Podcast.
Receivables insurance is designed to protect your business from the risk of non-payment if your buyer can't pay due to bankruptcy, insolvency, or other financial hardship. Having this type of insurance will see you paid out on a percentage of your invoice value, but it's important to understand your payment terms and how they relate to documents such as invoices. On this episode of the Trade Securely Podcast, my guest is Carolyn Nephew. She's the National Vice President of Sales, Trade Credit, and Political Risk at Cowan Insurance Group, and she's here to explain how to understand your payment terms and how to manage them effectively. Carolyn, good to speak to you.
Good morning, Janet. Nice to speak with you as well.
So I think that people think payment terms are payment terms, and this is a fairly simple thing to understand, but it can get a bit murky. So what do companies need to know about payment terms and their relationship to trade documents like invoices?
Thank you, Janet. Once you purchase a trade credit program, managing is an absolute must so that the policy pays out as you would expect it to in the event of a claim. Coming to terms with payment terms, here are some guiding principles, whether you actually have a trade credit policy or not. Purchase orders establish trading parameters. By identifying the parties, the particulars of the transaction, and the payment terms, you can choose to take orders from your customers in many different ways, but you must find a method to confirm the agreed payment terms, whether in a purchase order, on an invoice, or verified in an email. And when you invoice, you must identify the legal name of the party who is obligated to pay and those terms of payment.
Okay, so when you say have to agree to the payment terms or the method, so let's just discuss that a little bit further on. So if I have an invoice and it says net 30, those are my payment terms, and I know that you're going to pay me by check or by wire or however, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
But if the invoice says net 30, they may actually not be the real payment terms, Janet. We managing the real payment terms, let's take your example and say it is a net 30 on the invoice, the client documented it properly, but the client and the buyer have an understanding that they're actually paying regularly at 65 days. Generally speaking, the client is agreeing to the de facto terms as the net invoice 30-day terms are regularly paid at those 65 days. The policy should absolutely be amended to accommodate those 65 de facto days by either construed terms or by the maximum extension period, so that the client's requirement for filing past dues and claim submission follow the actual de facto terms as opposed to the formal net 30 on the documentation. And you could probably say to me, well, why wouldn't you just put net 65 on the invoice? Because that would then make those the real terms. What would happen in that case is that buyer would likely then take an additional 30 days because now his net is 65, he's going to push it another 30, and we've now elongated that receivable to 90 days. No one wants to do that. We're simply recognizing that they're having 65 days to pay. The invoice says net 30.
Okay, so how in your insurance policy do you indicate that is actually going to be de facto terms of net 65?
So what happens is through the construed terms or the maximum extension period. So we will show on the record and the aging that they have construed terms of 65 days. So any invoice that says net 30, according to the policy conditions, we've given them another 35 days. So 65 days has been effectively put into the policy parameters in the wording on an endorsement. The client continues to show net 30 on their invoice to their buyer. Therefore, the buyer never recognizes that they've actually been granted the extension formally.
Ah, I see. Okay. So the insurance provider knows that. The insurance provider's client knows that, but the actual person making the purchase still believes they're supposed to pay at net 30.
Absolutely.
Okay. So if you stick with your documented terms, how do you ensure the policy reacts to your trading reality then?
So the policy reacts to it in the event that that buyer then subsequently stops paying, then we're going to reflect the reporting of the overdue at the 65 days plus that maximum extension period of 30 days. So it's really not, let's say the aging sits at 65 days, it's not reportable because we've defined the construed terms as 65 days. But now we're at 95 days. That triggers the reporting requirements on the policy. And then that's when the client is now reporting to the insurance carrier. They've gone beyond their de facto terms, and now they're actually in a reportable fashion. And all the triggers of the policy occur after that.
Okay, so let's just talk a little bit about this reporting period so that people really understand that. So if you have a policy, somebody stops paying or is a little bit late in payment, there is this reporting period. So just define that so we completely understand that.
So typically, most underwriters will require a reporting period, whether it's 30 days past due, 60 days past due, over 90 days, and there are certain thresholds. It might be 10,000, it might be 25,000, it might be 100,000. So those are requirements that a client, a policyholder, must abide by. So every month they would look at their aging and say, how many of my buyers have an outstanding greater than, let's say, $10,000 greater than 60 days past due? And that becomes a requirement under the policy in order to protect the coverage in the event that there's a claim filing. The insurance carriers require that reporting because they're keeping updated on how the buyers are paying their clients. And it will be, all of the underwriters share this intel, and it becomes an early detector of potentially a problem with a buyer.
Okay, so that's how they collect all their data and understand exactly what the market is doing at that current time, right?
Correct. And we will see in economies where we're starting to see now a bit of a downturn, that overdue reporting actually starts to become more, starts to increase. So we're seeing more people reporting past due because more companies are taking a bit longer to pay. So we can kind of see a trend starting to happen as cash flow starts to tighten.
Right. And is there a penalty if you don't report? Just so that, just as, you know, if you're a business owner and you're like, oh, what if I forgot to report? What happens?
The policy clearly states that failure to report could result in a non-payment of that claim.
Wow. Okay. Okay. So
it is serious.
Yeah, it is pretty serious. It's not like, oh, sorry, man, I forgot. It's like, you might not have coverage here. So, okay.
Correct.
What documentation will protect the business in the event an insurance carrier actually cancels or reduces coverage on one of your approved buyers?
Yes, that happens. And we call that Cowan paving the way for a smooth exit. As the underwriters are managing their exposures and their portfolios, they can and do reduce and sometimes cancel coverage. Two items or two products, two endorsements help with that: delayed effect of cancellation or construed coverage. Confusion occurs with these two types of coverages. And let me just define them for you.
Yeah.
Delayed effect means you can take the orders after the cancellation or reduction date. The cancellation is actually stalled for the amount of time defined in the policy. So
okay,
it could
so
be
yeah,
60 days.
That. Yeah.
Yeah. Could be 60-day delayed effect. So if I got a cancellation today, then I would have 60 days with which I could still ship to that buyer and have full coverage on the policy. So it simply stalls it. I canceled it today. You have 60 days to continue trading with that buyer.
Okay.
The other wording is called construed coverage, which means you can ship what is already on the order book, but you cannot take any new orders. And this may be require a written purchase order.
Okay.
Which does the client have? Which does they need? Which underwriter is prepared to offer which? It is really a very technical point of the policy that equally becomes very key in managing that claim.
Okay. And is when you actually sign your policy, is that defined in the policy, or is that something that comes as the policy moves on and they decide that, you know, the carrier is going to cancel or reduce coverage on an approved buyer? How do you know what's going to happen with delayed effect and construed coverage when you sign your policy, or do you even know?
They're defined very well in the policy if you are technically inclined. As brokers, what we do is we make sure that we speak with clients up front and understand their trade transaction. For example, when we say delayed effect of cancellation, are they spot buy purchasing, or do they have ongoing business with certain key customers? If it's ongoing and they're taking a purchase order today and shipping for the next 6 months, we need that delayed effect of cancellation, because if they stop selling to their buyer, the underwriter is putting them in a contract frustration because they've committed to supply and now they can't just stop supplying. Some customers simply take purchase order by purchase order, so their time for delayed effect will be a lot shorter and they may not need it. Construed cover may be fine for that type of business. So really it's at the outset, Janet, that you need to understand what it is they need in the event of that cancellation and reduction. And, you know, to kind of add to that, not every underwriter policy requires that. We have non-cancelable coverage underwriters as well. So a delayed effect isn't required. They can't cancel the policy. The credit limit.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about aging from the invoice date versus due date, and then what actually is considered overdue.
Correct. So the invoice date versus the due date, when people print their aging, it's really important that it's 30 days past due. So on the aging, if it's the invoice date, actually we're shifting one column over if it's net 30-day terms. So it's always from the due date that the reporting requirement is done. And so we, again, explain to the client that maybe they want to run a different type of aging report to make sure that they are, in fact, collecting the proper data for reporting requirements.
Right. Okay. Because if you're taking it from the wrong point, it might not actually be overdue, right?
Correct. And, yeah. And okay. Yes, and we would be very careful with clients, and we are very with saying, because then what you're starting to do is feed what will be perceived as negative information to the insurance company, and in fact, it's not negative. It's not even reportable, because once the insurance carriers get that reporting, they're going to start doing an analysis on the buyer, because it's the first sign that there may be a problem.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay. What are the general policy implications of being overdue with your buyers?
When you're overdue with the buyer, number one, you have to report per the requirement. Equally, when you're overdue with a buyer, you cannot continue to ship. So future shipments may not be covered without the insurance carrier's authorization to do so. So when we get to that overdue period, as brokers can are involved with our clients saying, okay, what is the situation involved? And a great case in point will be with some of the big box stores like a Loblaws or a General Motors. They typically will have invoices that are delayed because reconciliation issues, pricing adjustments. Those aren't really overdue, but they are, by the policy definition, reportable requirement. And what we will do for some policies is simply amend the reporting requirement to make exceptions for those, normal transactions that happen because of it's situation specific and it's buyer specific. So it takes the requirement to report, that administrative requirement, off the policy holder's requirement, recognizing that it's a situation that is admissible under the policy.
Okay, fair enough. So, Carolyn, you've been in this business a long time. You've seen some stories and some incidents. So can you share some real life stories about you know, how misunderstandings of payment terms has actually affected a business?
Absolutely. And, you know, we're always talking to clients, making sure we understand their business and as their business it changes and evolves. And we'd like them to call us every time they do something different. They don't. So sometimes we back into them and then fix it at a later date. One situation, very specific, is we had a client that started to trade on dating terms. And basically what that means is they were shipping product in the spring to a buyer, agreeing to get paid late summer. So they were really at 120, 150 day terms. And everybody agreed it was worked for both buyer and seller. The bank, as they're margining the policy for financing, excludes anything greater than 90 day terms from their bank margining formula.
Okay.
So 3 months into the shipping schedule, the bank noticed the 90-day aging was increasing. They stopped financing the company. The policyholder came back and said, my bank's not margining my receivable. We got to the situation. We defined in the policy dating terms, which were 120, 150 days. The bank looked at the documentation and then margined the customer with more money on the cash, and it improved the cash flow. So they agreed terms. It changed their cash ability from their banking organization. Once we got involved, we created the policy or amended the policy to accommodate that. So now when the aging gets submitted to the financial institution on a monthly basis to manage that line, the bank looks at those specific buyers and said, yes, we understand that they're going to be sitting at the 120-day column. And that's fine. The policy agrees and accords with that.
Right. So, and I've talked to a few other people about this, but I think when you buy a receivables insurance policy, it's a living, breathing thing that you have to be watching and dealing with all the time. It's not something you put away in a drawer for a year and worry about when it's due again, right? Like, this is something you're managing. Is it a daily basis as a business? I suppose it depends on the size of your business, but you're watching this thing all the time, right?
This is so true, because it is. It's living and breathing as your receivables change, your buyers change, your terms of payment change. Everybody's having discussions on how to do business better, how to achieve more business. And in some of these creative discussions, it actually affects the terms that you've agreed initially, and it could put you in breach of the policy. So we're always working with the credit managers and likely the CFO's VP finance to continue to encourage them to keep the discussion open with us. Those reporting requirements, what are you changing as far as your terms of payment, how you're invoicing a buyer, is that changing? You're right. It's every day you're kind of looking at it, saying, am I according with the policy?
Right. And I guess for, you know, somebody who's a credit manager or a CFO or whatever, it's a constant learning experience, because probably something new flies up all the time that you just don't quite understand. And that's why you need the help of the insurance professional to sort it out for you.
Yes, agreed. We are very technical in that aspect. So we spend a lot of time sitting, understanding the business. Where is the risk? Is there a new risk because you've changed something? Or is it improved risk, perhaps, because you've changed it? So we work regularly counseling credit managers, VP finance, even underwriters at times. We'll go back to them and ask them how they would like to see the documentation crafted to best encompass the coverage at the policyholder's request.
Yeah. Carolyn, thank you very much for guiding us through this and through all the terms, et cetera. I think that probably this is one of those podcasts that people will listen to again and again until it becomes really clear in their head as to, you know, what the terms all mean and everything. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Janet. It was a pleasure to participate.
Carolyn Nephew is the National Vice President, Sales, Trade Credit, and Political Risk at Cowan Insurance Group. Thank you very much for listening to the Trade Securely podcast. It's brought to you by the Receivables Insurance Association of Canada, and we're helping Canadian businesses grow safely and securely at home and abroad. So please share the podcast with your business network. And you can also follow us on Twitter at Receivables Insurance Canada, LinkedIn at Receivables Insurance Association of Canada, and check out the YouTube channel under Trade Securely. And you can also visit the business news website at tradesecurely.ca. I'm Janet Eastman. Thanks for listening.